Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Get Lifted with me, Lisa Snowden. Thank you so much for joining. Today is World Menopause Day and I wanted to release a special episode of Get Lifted to mark the occasion. I'm going to be talking to Dr. Menopause Care and we're going to do a deep dive into all things menopause. What is it? What is the menopause?
The menopause is when your ovaries essentially stop doing what they've done since puberty and they stop producing eggs and they stop producing hormones. And so your body, where it has been used to having lots of hormones around, suddenly doesn't. And it's that gives you the symptoms.
Now, before we kick off this episode, I just want to reiterate that we discuss a whole range of topics on the show. It's important for you to understand that I'm not a trained professional and any advice that I give is purely my own opinion. Now, if you want to engage in any of the therapies, the services, anything that we discuss throughout the series or in this show today, just make sure that you always talk to a trained and accredited professional so they can tailor their service to your particular health and medical needs. It's really important that you bear that in mind and that you speak to your GP or your doctor before you change anything. But I do want you to enjoy this episode. Right, let's get lifted. So, Dr. Menopause Care, Naomi Potter, we are talking today on World Menopause Day. In the middle of Menopause Awareness Month, this is kind of amazing, right?
It is. And I think this year it's bigger and better than ever, isn't it? Like last year it was around, but this year everybody is talking about it and it is brilliant.
Everybody's talking about it. The conversation is just like, it's on everybody's lips.
Yep.
It's just so exciting. We are learning more about it, or we're having more awareness surrounding this new phase in our lives. But I kind of want to take it back to basics because when we're little, when I was about 7, I learned about my periods. In school, you learn about your periods. Then you learn about pregnancy. But not at any point did I ever learn about perimenopause or menopause. I had no idea that I was even going to go into that phase of my life. So let's just talk about, what is it? What is the menopause?
The menopause is when your ovaries essentially stop doing what they've done since puberty and they stop producing eggs and they stop producing hormones. And so your body, where it has been used to having lots of hormones around, suddenly doesn't. And it's that gives you the symptoms. And it's that what makes your period stop. And it's the transition that for some women can take years. That is the kind of perimenopause, and then when your periods finally stop, that's the menopause.
Let's get some definition on the perimenopause and the menopause, because they are the same but not the same, right?
Yeah, so the perimenopause is the time leading up to the menopause where there is hormonal fluctuations and symptoms start to develop. Whereas the menopause is a retrospective diagnosis. So you only know whether you are into the menopause a year after your periods have stopped.
So your last period has to have been a year ago, and that signifies that you are into the menopause.
And HRT can complicate that picture, because so a lot of women say, well, now I'm on HRT, how do I know when I'm in it?
Yeah.
Well, you don't really, because HRT is a kind of artificial replacement of hormones, and so you get endometrial thickening, you can get bleeds, and so it's a much trickier one, but it doesn't actually really matter. But it's just one of those kind of little foibles.
Okay, so let's talk about perimenopause and the symptoms and the signs, like some of the first signs. Now, from my understanding, that can hit us at any age. I mean, I read recently that I think one of the youngest girls that had been recorded going into or starting with perimenopause symptoms was 11 years old. So, I mean, it literally can just come about at any age. For the majority of us, it is late 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah, I think it's so for the majority of women. So women with POI, which is what you were describing, which is premature ovarian insufficiency. That's a slightly different. I mean, there is something going on there. There is something that is faulty that's caused the ovaries to stop working, and mm-hmm. that can happen mm-hmm. in your teens, and 20s,
hideous.
And early 30s, and of course, it's very hard to get to that diagnosis. It can take a long time and a lot of suffering. For women who haven't got that diagnosis, so they're just having an early menopause or a menopause, symptoms typically begin in early 40s, mid 40s, sometimes late 40s, sometimes late 30s. But it's just such a massive spectrum. And symptoms can come in and then they can disappear and then they can, and different ones can come in and then they disappear. And it's why it's so confusing.
So tell me about some of the first kind of symptoms that we should be looking out for. And then I'm going to explain like kind of what I went through as well and kind of how I got to the stage I'm at now, basically.
Because you have estrogen receptors everywhere, you can have literally any symptom, which is what also makes it so confusing. So hot flushes and night sweats and periods changing are the typical symptoms, but... Yeah. They are by no means the only symptoms. And those tend to, if you have those symptoms, at least that kind of indicates what's going on for you. Mm. Whereas the other symptoms that you see often in women in their early 40s is just things like anxiety creeping in, where you've never really been an anxious person before, yeah. not coping, your brain changing so that you might forget things, or feel more angry than usual, or feel low, difficulty in sleeping. So those can all be very distressing and also very much harder to pinpoint as being the perimenopause. PMS can worsen. That can be another really troublesome symptom. And then there's the more physical symptoms. So hair loss, skin changing, dry eyes, tinnitus, palpitations, bowel habit change, vaginal symptoms, urinary symptoms, muscle pains, joint pains, body shape changing. I mean, there's so many.
There's about 30, isn't there? About 30 different.
Well, I think they've got up to about 60 now.
Is there about 60
there's about
now?
60.
Oh my gosh. And like you said, it's so different for every woman. Like this journey, this kind of these changes, you don't get everything either. Like, you know, you don't. And I think it's so hard because it's something that for me, I didn't want to admit was happening, I think. But also I didn't recognize was happening. So early 40s for me, I was diagnosed with depression. And that was due to being in the doctor's surgery and being so overly emotional. And I went a few times and he was like, you know, literally, you just scratch beneath the surface and you burst into tears. There's something going on here. You're just very over emotional. I think we need to stabilize this with some antidepressants, and they were the serotonin uptake thingies. So that's what I ended up taking. But looking back now, I think that, and I was 42 then. And I look back and I think, you know, I hadn't really ever had depression. I mean, you know, and I think that that definitely was the start of my perimenopause journey.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
And I think that happens to a lot of ladies, doesn't it? It's like a lot of them go in, a lot of us girls go in completely at our wit's end, really over emotional, really just, well, depressed, anxious, all of those things, thinking that there's something wrong with you. The last thing you ever think of, it's my hormones. You know, I was still having my periods. My cycles were really all over the place. I mean, I'd get them sort of like every 23 days, every 18 days, and I'd have like a very short cycle. But I didn't mind that because it was like really light periods, really short cycle. It wasn't too bad, the pain. I almost kind of like skipped through my periods and I was just like, okay, they're just getting lighter and less frequent, or sometimes more frequent. But it was the emotions and it was the emotional impact on my kind of mental health and my dealing day to day that was horrible. Anyway, I took the antidepressants for about 6 months.
Wow. Okay.
And I know, because I just didn't want to really be on them. And I had a feeling that it wasn't the right diagnosis for me. I just had a feeling. George and I ended up meeting and getting back together. We'd already been together, but we ended up kind of rekindling our relationship and our love. And I remember saying to him when we first got together, I was like, you know, I'm going to be 43, and if you want to have a baby, we need to start thinking about it, because, you know, it's something that I'd always wanted to do, but I just never had been in the right situation. And so, in my mind, the depression was not linked to perimenopause. And when I was 43 and back with George, who is the love of my life, I was thinking like, we could potentially look at IVF, you know, or just some other avenues that, you know, fertility options. And then literally a year later, I was sitting in, you know, a private doctor's office, you know, somewhere really expensive in Harley Street. And he was telling me after taking the bloods that I was perimenopause and that I am getting old. And how do I feel about that? And I probably wouldn't be able to have a baby. And all of this stuff just came tumbling down on my shoulders. And I just felt like I couldn't breathe. Like I literally was like I'd been punched in the stomach. And it was just all these words that he was just sort of spilling out at me, like, you know, getting old, you know. And I just suddenly thought, oh my God, my body's almost failed me. And it was really hard, because he was like, how do you feel? And of course, I didn't want to cry in front of him, because I was like, you know, when you like dig your nails into your hands and you're like, be strong. But it was really hard. So being told in that moment that I was perimenopause, and that I probably wouldn't be able to have a baby, and that I was getting old, and basically I'm going to be knackered and old, and you're basically, you know, just, your life's over. I just felt unbelievably numb when I left his office. So I think a lot of us are scared, because it almost signifies everything's over. Like, you're not fertile anymore. You're going to just start looking really old, feeling really old. And it's a really horrific time. And I think that's why a lot of us just sort of goes, well, I haven't got hot flushes. And actually, I don't feel that fine. And actually, my periods are still okay. And you sort of like justify it by saying, I don't, you know, all these things aren't happening to me. So can you explain the fertility aspect and the sort of early perimenopause symptoms and sort of needing to take HRT to stabilize, or, you know, trying to boost the imbalance of the hormones, but at the same time, potentially wanting to get pregnant or to try for a baby or to try fertility options?
Fertility is so tricky because of, you know, how we live our lives now. And women, you know, generations ago would have their first baby when they were 20. And that's got older as society has changed. But really, fertility declines significantly over the age of 35, which, when you think about it, is just so young, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then by the time you're 40, there is again, even more of a decline. And by the age of 45, it is, you know, you'd be considered lucky to get pregnant and have an uneventful pregnancy. And good outcome. And it's just because egg quality declines with age, and it's just, you know, one of those biological facts, which is just feels very unfair.
I already knew my egg quality was, because I'd had tests, you know, I'd had tests, so I already knew that I was challenged there. I mean, it's a no-brainer, you know, when you, as soon as you, like you said, 35, 37, that starts to decline, doesn't it? So that wasn't a shock to me, but then it was like that double whammy of like, your egg quality is already, you know, pretty poor, and now you're perimenopausal, and you, you know, and so I was just devastated.
So it's the middle of the night and I'm awake and I'm hot. I'm having one of my hot flushes. So it's not too bad. Like, the bed's not soaking wet, which is amazing. But my pyjamas are pretty soaking. So I've whipped off my pyjamas and I've turned all my pillows over. And I'm trying not to wake George up. But sometimes when he comes in for cuddles and we end up spooning, I literally am like a furnace. So yeah, I need to have a bit of distance sometimes while I'm having one of my hot flushes. But I'm probably going to put on, I've got a Deepak Chopra app that is gorgeous and it's beautiful music and I love just hearing Deepak's voice. And so I'm going to put that on and try and go back to sleep.
If there's anybody listening that is in a similar situation to me, that doesn't mean necessarily that it's the end of the road, you know, for you to try for a baby, or, you know, there's other options. And, you know, once you do get your hormones back on track, if you do decide to go down the HRT route, there is hope, right? It's not, it doesn't have to be just a sort of like definite no.
Nothing is, no, it is not a definite no. I mean, I think it would be giving women false hope to say that HRT will bring your fertility back, because to levels when you are much younger, because it won't do that. But yeah, you are definitely, it's definitely thought to be better to take HRT if you're, yeah, perimenopausal, if you are looking for a pregnancy, than not taking HRT. So a lot of women are scared about taking hormones if they're trying for a baby, but actually it's the opposite. It can help with that, with the chances of getting pregnant.
So when he looked at my bloods, he also said that he showed me the scales of the different percentages of what's going on. I had zero progesterone.
That would be because you weren't ovulating.
So when I went to see him, before that, I was in crippling pain. So my period since I spoke, you know, since like 42, in that year, they became so painful, so heavy, like almost hemorrhaging every time I had a bleed, couldn't leave the house, awful. You'd go out for dinner and then all of a sudden you'd get your period and then you just would have bled everywhere and it was just awful. So it was like, you don't want to leave the house, plus you're like excruciating pain. And then they sort of just stopped. It was really strange. So then he did the tests and he said no progesterone, and I've got so much estrogen. And I'd also at that point put on a lot of weight, so I was very puffy everywhere. And he looked and did an internal and he said I still had follicles, so I should still be having a period or a bleed, but the progesterone that he prescribed me was going to kickstart everything and everything was going to be okay again. So since then I've kind of read a little bit more and I know that that's not actually how everybody does that, or how everybody reads those results. So it's kind of confusing to me. So from what I've just told,
is it
confusing for you? I was like, okay, so I have no progesterone. That's why I'm not having a period, and that's why I've got put on weight, and then I'm really puffy and grumpy and emotional and anxious and sweaty, and all of these symptoms have started to come on. And he was like, here, have this progesterone cream, rub it on twice a day, and everything's going to be magically back to normal again. What do you think about that?
So you measure progesterone at day 21 of an average cycle to look to see whether ovulation has taken place, because the follicle, you have an egg growing within a follicle within an ovary, and yeah, then you release the egg at about day 14, and then what is left in the ovary becomes something called the corpus luteum. And that secretes progesterone in order to make the womb an amazing environment for a grown baby. That's why it's called progesterone, progestation. It's a hormone that encourages pregnancy. If you don't ovulate, then you don't make progesterone. And so that's why progesterone levels can be low in the perimenopause, because your ovaries aren't working properly and you aren't ovulating. We don't tend to measure progesterone levels in perimenopause or menopause because it doesn't impact on what treatment we use. We wouldn't necessarily do estrogen levels in women over the age of 45 because if they're symptomatic, then we know pretty much what's going on. They need more estrogen. Giving progesterone to women through a cream through the skin, there isn't a huge degree of logic to it because, well, firstly, progesterone isn't really absorbed through the skin. So it doesn't really make sense as to how it's gonna work. Giving it to make you feel better, well, some women like progesterone. So if you would just give oral progesterone in the perimenopause, in some women it does make you feel better because it can have a calming kind of sedative effect. But yeah, it's not gonna replace your estrogen.
No. See, this is the thing. So just going back to it, another thing he said to me, because I was, I guess, quite anxious and quite like jumpy. He said, I'm going to give you this progesterone because you're really jumpy and this is going to calm you down.
Right.
Yeah. So I feel like it, obviously the bloods have come back and it said that I had zero progesterone. And also he said that, you know, it has a calming effect, similar, exactly what you said. But it was, and this is another thing that needs to be cleared up. These are two camps. So this doctor I went to see was the bioidentical creams, which is the progesterone administered through a cream being absorbed through my skin. And then the body identical is the registered, licensed, and the progesterone pill. So it's an oral or vaginally taken pill rather than a cream. So this is another thing that's massively confusing for us women. It's like, where do we go? What do we take?
The kind of British Menopause Society registered doctors, you know, so that the kind of accredited camp, the guidelines with progesterone is we do give progesterone, but we give it for the purpose of protecting the endometrium from additional estrogen. So when you give somebody who has a uterus additional estrogen, of the lining of the uterus called the endometrium thickens.
Yeah.
And if you have estrogen on its own for years and years and years, it can eventually cause something called endometrial hyperplasia, which is where the cells start changing. And eventually that can lead to endometrial cancer. In order to prevent that, we give progesterone. So that's normally the only reason we would give progesterone, is if you've got a uterus and you're being given additional estrogen. Very occasionally you might give it, you know, for in other scenarios. And the British Menopause Society guidelines are not, in a perimenopausal woman, give them progesterone without estrogen, because it doesn't really make sense.
Even though my bloods came back and said that I already had so much estrogen, I didn't need any extra.
And sometimes you do see that. You do sometimes see bloods coming back with high levels of estrogen, surprisingly high levels of estrogen. Yep. There's a lot of selling that comes on the back of estrogen dominance. So okay, things like expensive investigations, expensive supplements, expensive diets to clear out this kind of excessive toxic estrogen. But that doesn't make sense because, so firstly, estrogen levels vary. Secondly, we have a liver that, if there is an excess of anything, very, very effectively detoxifies and purifies and eliminates waste. And it's very, very confusing for vulnerable women who see kind of claims about, you know, you must detoxify this, that, and the other, and take this to help you do this, when it's just not substantiated by any evidence.
I mean, this is the thing. We are vulnerable and we are at our wit's end, so we want help. And it is so, so hard to know where to turn, where to go, who to trust. And certainly that doctor's appointment was word of mouth through a friend who had had amazing results. Go and see my doctor. And then I did another one. It was like, oh no, he's not good. Go and see this doctor. And it's like, people are passing around numbers here and there. And, you know, we want the help. We were like, okay, how much money? I was just going to throw some money at it because I want to feel like myself again. I don't want to feel like I can't go to work. I don't want to feel like I want to break up with my partner. I want to have my libido back, my life back, my body back. I want to stop. I want to sleep. You know, all of these horrible, crippling symptoms that come and just take over your life and just change everything. It is literally miserable. And so
frightening as well. It's so frightening. It's because nothing feels like, nothing in your entire life feels normal, does it? Nothing feels right.
No, you just feel so lost. You feel unattractive. Nothing fits you in your wardrobe. You know, that's all the sort of, well, it's just everything. You know, you just feel hideous and you don't want to see your friends and you don't want anybody to, you don't want your partner to see you naked and you don't want to see yourself naked and all these silly little things that, well, they're not silly because at the time they're horrible, but you know, then your sleep's impacted and then you just feel wretched throughout the day. And going to work is really quite a daunting experience. Getting on the train, on the tube, on the bus, it's like you having these hot flashes out of nowhere and you're so conscious of the fact that all the back of your hair is soaking wet and you look like you're just losing your mind and you feel like you're losing your mind. So when somebody offers you a lifeline and says, there's this doctor, you know, it's £450 to go and see him, and then you see him and then you do the bloods, it's another 100 quid, and then you've got to do some scans, and then that's another, like, and it, before you know it, you spent £1,000 and you think you're getting the right help, but actually you're not.
It is so hard. I mean, I think one of the things that is a quite a useful way of thinking about medical help is that you can't get an objective opinion from a healthcare professional if their aim is to sell you something. So because they will always be biased. And you can't, you know, it's just psychology. So if somebody is trying to sell you lots of supplements or lots of, you know, programs or whatever, then I would definitely have second thoughts about seeing them, because their livelihood is dependent on making a diagnosis that encourages people to spend a lot of money on what their suggestions are. And it's why doctors, we don't sell HRT. It's why we don't sell supplements, because we then can't be objective about it.
Another thing that doesn't help, and the one thing that George and I argue about, one of the only things we argue about, is when the heating's on and I'm having a hot flush and I'm just like stressing out, and then the heating is pumping out of every radiator and it's just overwhelmingly hot. Okay, rant over.
Basically, what I'm on now is body identical hormones, which is, I buy it from, I get it from the pharmacy, and you can get a prescription from your GP. So this is what I'm on now, and it has saved me a lot of money. Now, I speak to so many women, and I know that they are finally getting through to their GPs, and the GPs are finally prescribing them what they want, and but it's taking a long time because doctors don't know enough about the menopause, unfortunately. They do a lot. I don't want to like badmouth GPs or bash them or anything, because they work so hard and they do so much and on so many different areas of health. But when it comes to kind of like female health specialists and sort of locking down your GP, trying to have a bit more time with him or her and trying to get some kind of resolution as far as like dealing with your hormones, it is quite tricky. But, you know, I've always said that, you know, you've got to push, you got to be tenacious, you got to be relentless, you got to write down your symptoms, you got to write down your cycle, you've got to write down what's going on in your life, and you've got to take it with you.
Take someone with you, because then somebody else can do the talking for you.
Because usually you're just totally like you've lost your mind and you're just so grateful. You just probably just burst into tears as soon as you're in there. And they're like, right, you've got 10 minutes, make this snappy. And so you've got so much to get across. And I know I'm laughing, but it's just that sheer panic of like, okay, so da da da. And then they're like, okay, you're clearly emotionally distressed. You clearly have anxiety and depression, some mental health issues. I'm going to diagnose you with X, Y, and Z. And it's not the goddamn hormones that you need. You know, that is so far down on the list. And then if you do get a good doctor, or not a good doctor, but a doctor who's a little bit more, you know, has a bit more empathy and wants to kind of spend a bit more time with you and get to the bottom of it, you might get some blood tests.
Which you may not even need.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that if you're 45 and over, then these symptoms that you go in with, either anxiety, depression, your periods being all over the place, tinnitus, sweats, night sweats, pelvic floor, needing to pee, vaginal atrophy, which is dry vagina, painful sex, all of these lovely things, you know, he or she should be able to say, yes, you are definitely perimenopausal and you need some help.
Bloods were totally appropriate for you because you were so young. You know, you were only 42. So that was that. Yeah. That's totally appropriate. But for a woman over the age of 45, you know, it's menopause till proven otherwise, really.
But then if you've done the bloods and they don't read them right, so they say, oh, no, you're totally normal. You're within range. So what does that actually mean? And how do you change? What do you do if that's almost like that's the conclusion? Okay, finish. Goodbye. You're like, no, wait.
I mean, sometimes they are, so they would be considered, even by us, you know, kind of menopause doctors, they would be considered normal and within range. But the problem with normal and in range is that the normal and in range is for the entire adult female population, which includes 80-year-olds and 18-year-olds. So it is entirely appropriate for an 80-year-old woman to have zero estrogen and it would be reported as normal. But it's not. Right. But it doesn't mean that that zero estrogen isn't causing you your symptoms at 42.
So the bloods are a waste of time pretty much then if you're over 45, because, and that's...
If you suspect there may be something else going on, so another pathology, so think of something like a thyroid issue, or, you know, there are other causes of night sweats. There is definitely a place for blood tests if there is a question about the diagnosis. So say, you know, women who have joint pains, joint swellings, those kind of things, you have to think, is something else going on? Same with palpitations. You know, there are scenarios where blood tests are appropriate. But if everything comes back normal, then it doesn't mean that it's not menopause. And the same with the under 45s, like it's because the diagnosis of menopause is less likely, it is important to exclude other causes, because the last thing you want to do is miss a hypothyroid diagnosis or something like that. But
no, you're right. A heart condition or something that could be looming. Okay.
Yeah. So you look for other causes, but the majority of the time they come back normal. And then that's the point that a lot of women come unstuck, because, so say you have got a normal FSH and say your estradiol is, you know, in the normal range and every other blood test is normal. Then at that point, you know, a doctor might be tempted to try antidepressants, when actually, if a woman's not ever had a mental health issue in her entire life, to suddenly develop it at 42 would be very unusual, really unusual. It normally is something that that starts in, you know, your late teens, and then it keeps kind of reappearing and disappearing throughout your throughout life. Unless there's a trigger, you know, if you have a very traumatic life event, then absolutely you can have it's more likely. But from out of nowhere, especially with the symptoms that you had, I mean, that would be menopause.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let's talk about HRT then, because it has got such a scary reputation. And, you know, the science and all the reports from back in the early 2000s, which was all incorrect and, you know, basically demonized HRT, and all of the doctors panicked and took everybody off of it. And now there's still this kind of stigma around it being something that isn't good for you and that is dangerous.
It is. And it's just so frightening. So there was a couple of big studies that came out in the early 2000s. So before the 2000s, quite a lot of women were on HRT, really quite happy on it. It had a big impact on their life and their symptoms. And then those two big studies came out and it frightened the life out of everybody, because they suggested that HRT massively increased the risk of breast cancer, but also heart disease and strokes, where previously it was thought that they were protective. And so a whole cohort of doctors took a whole cohort of women off of HRT and didn't start HRT in another cohort of women. So it was a massive, massive setback for women's health. And of course, all of those studies, because of the scariness of them, in that, you know, we're giving women in their 40s and 50s this, you know, this awful medication that's going to kill them. The headlines that go with that are, you know, are widespread, and it filters through kind of culturally and from, you know, medically. And then, of course, when the newer data comes out that's much more reliable, that suggests that actually it doesn't cause heart disease and strokes, and it's likely to be protective against heart disease and strokes, it's much less of a headline. It doesn't grab people's attention. It's much less of a pulling power to go and buy that newspaper that's, it's not on the front page, not on the front pages of the newspapers. And so it doesn't filter through, and it doesn't filter through in the medical press, and it doesn't filter through into the national press. And so those myths are perpetuated. And so, you know, the doctors practicing today would have been junior doctors when those studies came out, and they'll still be practicing according to what they understand to be true. And same with women. I mean, women in their 40s and 50s today will remember those studies coming out. And it's, you know, once there is that fear and that connection in you, it's very hard to break that fear. And that's what we're fighting about at the moment. And of course, HRT is not every woman wants HRT, not every woman can have HRT, but it's just empowering women to know what the facts are as we understand them at the moment, and to make that decision for them without something that's not true preventing them from seeking it.
Has the actual HRT in itself changed at all since, you know, in the last 20, 30, 40 years? I know the way we take it.
Yes, it has. So it has. The estrogens that we take, that we prescribe now, are through the skin. So that is new. It used to all be oral. And when you take estrogen through the skin, it's metabolized in a different way, which makes it safer. Oral estrogens put your risk of clots in vessels up a little bit, just like the pill does. Taking it through the skin doesn't do that. So it's a less risky way of taking estrogen. It's also thought to be better for breasts. And the progesterone that we now use, the body identical eutrogestan, is thought to, again, to be better from a breast point of view. And so the estrogens that they used in the studies were thought to be less breast friendly, and because they were oral, more clotty. So that's the reason why there is a difference. So yes, there is a difference. And the HRT that we prescribe routinely, it's not expensive, is thought to be the safest way of delivering it.
So when you say clotting, you mean the deep vein thrombosis, which is but actually when you take the pill, which I took for so many years, the clotting is associated with taking the pill. I mean, that's the risk that you take when you take the pill, and you literally take a pill. It's orally. So what else is in the pill? I mean,
the pill, the combined pill, contains a synthetic progesterone and synthetic estrogen. And, you know, in quite high doses. And that's why you are more likely to get a clot with the combined pill. It's why they like, you know, we try and take women who are overweight or who are smokers. So those are two more risk factors for clots off the combined pill younger. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I used to take the pill for ages and it was horrible. And I remember it aggravated me. I got puffy, I got swollen, I got moody, I got emotional. I mean, my hormones have just been yo-yoing my whole life, I think, because you're managing them. You know, you're trying to, you know, it goes back to like, just, you know, like I'm talking about when we learn about periods and we know that we need to use contraception, and then you either want to get pregnant or you don't want to get pregnant. And then all of a sudden you can't get pregnant and you have to take something else. It's just all this juggling act with our hormones that has such a big impact on our life.
Yeah. I mean, the pill can be really good. I mean, it's very, very safe. I mean, goodness, we've got so much data on pill use. It is really safe, and it definitely has its place. But some women just can't tolerate it. They tend to be the hormone sensitive women, which you probably are.
So you mentioned the Estragel. I take Linzetto, which is this great little spray. I'm always banging on about my Linzetto.
You looked for it then, didn't you?
I've always got it. I'm like, where is it? Where is it? I have it close by at all times.
My patients are like, I want the one Lisa has.
That little Linzetto is a lifesaver. But I have to say, I kind of messed up a few times with it, because when it starts running out and I use it, I'm not getting my full quota. And then if I don't use it as often as I should, then like the other day, like my night sweats kind of came back a little bit and my anxiety came back a little bit. So it's definitely something that you need to keep up with it. You know, it's like your nighttime regime, your morning regime. It's like brushing your teeth. You have to do it every day.
And can you feel it if you miss it for one day?
Yeah, it's not good. I just need to be on it regularly. And it's not just one day, actually. But what it is that I don't mark the side of the box, which is what you're supposed to do. It's got like 56 spritzes in it. And if you don't mark them down and you kind of know when you're getting to your 50th and your 54th, I don't feel like you're getting your full quota from about 50 onwards. But I don't know, because I don't mark it down. I'm just guessing. All I know is there's just a little bit left. So I might just like do a little double spritz, but I'm not getting the same amount. And, you know, I just said to George, you got to make sure I'm taking my hormones. And he's like, okay. He was like, just calm down.
And you can work out when it finishes though by however many sprays you take per day. Just work and then put a note in your calendar just saying, right, ditch it now.
But that's just too like much complication, isn't it? I don't know. I just had a bit of a wobbly week. And you know, sometimes those sort of things.
So you took them in the morning and forgot in the evening, or that kind of thing.
Yeah, or I always take it in the evening, because in the evening I also take my eutrogestrin pill, my progesterone pill, which I used to take orally, but that made me puffy, and I was taking two orally, and I was taking one orally, but I noticed that I was getting that similar to the contraceptive pill, that kind of puffy, swollen water retention. So I'm now taking it vaginally, which is fine. And I take it at night and I just pop it up inside me. Got to make sure I wear my underwear, because otherwise it gets a little bit, it kind of melts.
Yeah,
kind of melts,
waxy,
and goes a little
it?
Bit. You get a bit damp down there. Not very comfortable.
Not in a good way.
Okay, perfect example of when I'm not keeping up with my HRT. So frustrating. I've just been looking for my phone for about 20 minutes. I've had George looking for my phone. I'm like convinced it's in the office, or it's in my dressing room, or it's somewhere in the toilet, hunting high and low across the house, and sweating, panicking, stressing. Just anxiety through the roof, panicking about it, which is such a stupid thing to do. We're trying to leave the house, as I said. I think I'm repeating myself. I must be having brain fog as well. And George found it, and it was up by all my trainers. Like, what is it doing up there? I put my trainers away and packed my phone off into that area as well. I just feel like I'm losing my goddamn mind.
But yeah, I really like these hormones that I'm on, and I wouldn't be without them. But you know, one thing I've learned is that people go, I'm going through the menopause, and you actually don't go through the menopause. It's not like you go into a cloud and then out the other side, which is kind of how I envisage it. It's like you go into it and then you're in it, right? You're in the menopause. You're just in it. How long are you in it for? Do you have to take HRT forever? Can you just slowly wean off of it? Do symptoms stop? Like, what is this going into this menopause cloud that we don't come out of?
Well, the cloud can dissipate, but you have the first half of your adult life with your ovaries functioning, and then the second half of your adult life with them not. And that's all the menopause is. That's it. But as you go further into it, your hormone requirement often decreases. So if you start on HRT at 45, you may find that by the time that you're 55, you need less to control your symptoms. And then by the time, you know, you're 60, you might need a bit less. And then what women tend to do is a really personal decision. Like, they weigh up whether they want to be on it or not, depending on their perception of the risks and the benefits at the time. And so that's why every year we have a conversation and just discuss, you know, some women are like, I am taking this to the grave. Nobody is taking this off me, whatever happens. And others are like, I want to be on the absolute lowest dose possible for the shortest amount of time. And it's, you know, it's a personal decision. I mean, if you suddenly stop taking them, then you probably will feel it. Although not always. Sometimes you do see it. You do see that women sometimes just don't feel it at all. But everybody's different.
Yeah, everybody is different in this journey. And this is so individual and personal. And you might just have like 3 symptoms, or you might just be unfortunate and have so many. I think I had quite a few. When I look back, I feel like, I think the only one I didn't really have was tinnitus. Didn't affect my hearing. But most of the other ones I totally did. And the vaginal atrophy, not so much. I'm quite lucky at the moment that that didn't become too much of an issue. But then I'm not really having sex, so maybe I don't know.
Because that damn libido's gone missing.
Still searching.
Yeah, but you can get symptoms even if you can. Some women can't even, like, I had a patient this week who just found walking the dogs. Like, she couldn't walk the dogs. Or you can't ride a bike, or...
Because it's not just inside, it's not just your vagina, it's your vulva as well that could become so red and irritated
and
just even probably wearing jeans and knickers must...
Yeah, and a discharge that... So you think with dryness that you wouldn't have a discharge, but sometimes because you get inflammation in the area, then you can get this exudate that can be very unpleasant.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah... All sorts of things can happen.
Oh my gosh. I just can't believe that so many women just, you know, the 50% of the women, 50% of population are women, and like, we just are not educated enough on this. Thank God that this Menopause Awareness Month is happening and that this conversation is just being had and that the word is being spread and women are not so scared to talk about it. And I've never been afraid or ashamed of talking about things that are happening. I think all my life I've been like, oh my God, I've got my period. Oh my God, it's so heavy. Oh my God, this is going on. Oh my God, I've got my boobs are so swollen.
You are amazing though. You're amazingly open. It's just incredible. It is incredible. I can't, you know, it is so refreshing because we're so used to seeing, you know, glamorous women who are presented as, you know, perfection, and you don't ever, they don't even have periods, let alone have problems with them. And so I think it's just normalized it for everybody. And, you know, the more that women like you talk about this kind of thing, I think the more heard and seen everybody else will feel. It's great.
That's what's important to me. I just want us all to, because this can be such an amazing time in our lives, you know. It doesn't have to be the end. It doesn't have to signify that we just need to, like, dress in, like, really boring clothes and not want to be seen, you know. Once I started taking the HRT, I had more energy to go and work out. I had more incentive to start, you know, cooking better and eating better, and, like, you know, I noticed that my skin looked better, like on my face, like the actual texture of my skin, the muscle tone in my face, you know, this heaviness that I had around my jaw, that started to lift. Like, it almost reshapes and remolds your face when you get the HRT, you know, the pelvic floor issues, all of these things that you just think of there because you're older, you know, you look in the mirror or you need to pee when you're like trying to get the key in the door and all those sort of things. Once you sort of re-estrogenize your body and all the areas of your face and your, I mean, because it's everywhere, like you said, the estrogen receptors are literally what, in the follicles of our hair down to the tips of our toes.
Yeah, and they're denser in some areas than in others. But yes, I mean, it's like WD-40 really for female bodies. It's, you know, it helps with muscle tone. So not just pelvic floor muscle tone, but face, you know, facial muscle, arms, yeah. Arm muscles, leg muscles, skin texture and quality and collagen and structure and skin thickness. I mean, it's just, it is the most incredible hormone. And of course, some women, you can be without it, you know, and some women choose not to take HRT and they can be without their estrogen. But not always, not everybody.
No, and actually, when the reports came back all those years ago, 20 odd years ago, that it would cause, you know, all these horrible things, heart disease, breast cancer. But actually, taking the right hormones, the right hormone replacement therapy, taking estrogen protects your bones, protects your heart, protects your brain from Alzheimer's, all these really positive things.
So even if you have no symptoms, there are lots of protective features from HRT if you start it in the perimenopause. So estrogen keeps blood vessels squeaky clean and stretchy and soft and supple. Mm-hmm. And so if you take estrogen at that point, then it can keep them that way, which then lowers your risk of heart disease, lowers your risk of strokes, lowers your risk of vascular dementia. The Alzheimer's link is, the data is emerging. We don't know absolutely for sure, but it's possible that it's also protective against some forms of Alzheimer's, but we're kind of waiting for that. Bone protection, my goodness, absolutely. I mean, women's bone density drops off a cliff after the menopause, and taking estrogen therapy can not only prevent worsening of osteoporosis, but it can reverse it. It can help with bone buildup. So there are, you know, and also metabolism. You know, it can keep you in a kind of premenopausal metabolic state. So that's sugar control, lipid control, so cholesterol, muscle mass. It is not the devil, and estrogen does not cause cancer.
Can you explain that to me a little bit, just so that anybody, because I know that, I mean, I've got breast cancer in my family. I know it depends on the link and who in your family has had it, but on both sides of my family, like my grandma passed away from breast cancer, my auntie had a lumpectomy, my cousins had it on the other side, my grandma's sister, you know, so it's sort of filtered throughout the family. And so that was something that I was slightly concerned about, because it, you know, the demonized reports back in the day of it saying it will give you breast cancer. So can you explain that to me, how it doesn't increase the risk of breast cancer?
So estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer. So taking estrogen doesn't make breast cells convert into cancer cells. And, you know, if you kind of think about it logically, if estrogen caused cancer, then we'd all get cancer in our 20s and 30s, having had estrogen from puberty. And that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. What it's thought is that some breast tumours have receptors on them for estrogen and some for progesterone. But if you are postmenopausal, and so would therefore not have any estrogen floating around, and you have a small breast tumour sitting there with estrogen receptors on, if you're not exposing it to estrogen, and you're therefore not stimulating its growth. Whereas if you are postmenopausal and you have a tumour with estrogen receptors on, and you take extra estrogen in the form of HRT, you may therefore stimulate that breast tumour to grow and reveal itself.
That could trigger it, basically.
It can basically just kind of shorten the time taken for that tumour to present.
So what do you do? We have to be doing our mammograms, our ultrasounds, our breast checks, our cervical smears. We have to take some responsibility of that as well, and just to weigh up the pros and cons of whether, your symptoms are so bad that you want to take the HRT.
But the risk increase is small. That's the thing. Right. The risk increase is small and breast cancer is very common. So it's about putting it into perspective. And if you drink a couple of glasses of wine a night, you put your risk of breast cancer up by the same amount as if you use HRT. If you exercise for 2.5 hours a week, you reduce your risk of breast cancer by an equivalent degree to how much HRT increases it. So it's, but nobody says, oh, you must do your 2.5 hours of exercise or you're going to get breast cancer. And nobody says, don't drink that wine, it's going to give you breast cancer. And being obesity is a massive risk factor for breast cancer. It's the biggest risk factor. So
I just got a chill just seeing like the reality of it all. You know, it's like we have to look after ourselves. It's like the HRT isn't a silver bullet. It has to be a whole lifestyle awareness lifestyle change as we get older.
It's just one part of it. And screening is really important. Yes, I mean, cervical screening is important. Breast screening is important. Exercise is important.
Diet.
Diet.
Trying to alleviate stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, trying to...
Caffeine can...
I love it. This time of the year, I need it, but I don't need it.
I can't drink one cup of coffee. It sends me bananas.
I haven't had one for a couple of days, so in my mind, I've stopped. But I know that at the weekend, I'll be like, oh, I'll treat myself. But it's... do you know what? I'm going to throw this out there. I honestly think it makes me put on weight. I honestly think by having a couple of cups of coffee a day, I think it makes me put on weight. And I think it's the stress.
Do you have it with lots of milky... what coffee do you have?
I sometimes have a black and then I have a plant-based milk. But yeah, I think the extra milk is extra calories. But I also think more so it triggers my cortisol levels, my anxiety, which then makes me...
You get hungry.
Hold more water and... I don't know. Am I mad?
I don't think you're mad. If you've observed it in you, then... It's certainly a possibility.
So I like to have a little bit of a ritual when I go to bed. So I've got my my little sprays. So I've got a pillow spray, and let me just get that for you. So there's so many companies do some great sprays. Bamford have got a nighttime pillow mist called Silent Night. So I spray that. I use Wren as well, Wren and Now to Sleep. I don't use them both at the same time. These are just the different options you can use. And then I love using this little glass bottle from Balance Me, and it's called Beauty Sleep Concentrate CBD Oil. And what it is, I put a little bit on each of my temples, just roll it on, then a bit on the end of my nose, and then a bit on my kind of wrists. And it's a ritual of like just the spritz, the sprays, the smells, just sort of like trigger your mind into knowing that it's time to relax and go to sleep. And I find that extremely soothing. There's another product actually from Balance Me, which is the Beauty Sleep Hyaluronic Mist, which you spray on your chest, and that smells amazing. So all those kind of gorgeous nighttime smells just really help to chill me out and wind me down. And I quite like to have a little eye mask on as well. Dr. Harris do a great one with these little like kind of pressure points around the eyes. And then I've been taking something called 5-HTP, which is really good at kind of relaxing you and also boosting your mood. So I've been taking that for about the last 4 months, and I find that it really helps to chill me out. And in the morning, I'm in a pretty good mood. So it helps do something to the serotonin levels. And it's really safe to take as long as you're not on any kind of antidepressants or serotonin uptake pills. So yeah, it's really nice little pills to take. And like I said, magnesium as well. So they're my little sleep hacks when I'm feeling stressed or feeling like I can't switch off.
So is there any other things that you can think of to, you know, any apps or any books or anything that you kind of recommend, you know, to kind of like, I mean, because I practice mindfulness, I like a little bit of meditation. Like I said, I think this whole 360 approach to wellness, as well as obviously if you want to take HRT, you can take HRT, it is amazing. But, you know, for me, there's, you know, a few supplements here and there and also, but nice books and apps and meditation and music. Is there anything that you ever recommend to any of your patients that can kind of help to minimize their stress levels, or anything that you recommend?
So I recommend the Headspace app. I definitely recommend that to patients. And I recommend the Harley Street at Home group for access to, so it's very affordable access to yoga classes, Pilates classes, and then kind of self-care packages.
Do you send them to my self-care Sunday?
Lisa's self-care Sunday is the number one go-to. You don't need to look anywhere else, actually, because Lisa's self-care Sunday is all encompassing. Yeah. It covers every possible range.
There's beauty, there's wellness, there's like spirituality,
exercise, holistic living, diet, nutrition.
Yep. She sounds great.
Oh my god, amazing. Yeah, I knew you were just going to slip it in there somewhere, so I was just waiting, but you didn't, so I was like, okay. What is the Harley Street thing? I'm just going to write it down so we can put it on the show notes.
So you pay a subscription and you have access to a 4 weeks timetabling of like yoga, Pilates, exercise classes, face yoga, mindfulness, medical input,
and nutritional advice too.
Nutritional advice, got that one. Yeah,
brilliant. So you can dip in and out when you want, and you can kind of, you know, try it from the comfort of your own home. Absolutely. Without anybody looking at you if you're doing yoga for the first time, or doing some stretching or some face yoga, which requires some funny faces being pulled. But yeah, I think those sort of things are amazing. And I think going to classes with people is great too. So then you've got that camaraderie of other women or other men, and you're kind of struggling along together. I mean, I went to class this morning and I was literally just sweating, but I think that's good. I like sweating. I feel like important to sweat a couple of times a week, just to like just get those toxins out and to burn some of that fat, to boost the metabolism.
Yeah.
And getting out for long walks as well, you know, getting in the sunshine when you can, if those bright brisk kind of chilly mornings.
No, you definitely feel like if you come home and you're sweaty, you've done some good. You've definitely done something.
Yeah, and getting out in nature.
Yeah.
Doing sunshine, all that kind of thing.
Like sunshine is, sunshine on the back of your retina is really resetting. Really important.
Amazing. Thank you, Naomi. Thank you, Dr. Potter.
You're welcome, Lisa.
Thank you for all your invaluable advice on this World Menopause Day. Just doing a little roundup of everything that us ladies have been going through, that are going to go through, and just kind of like, you know, trying to educate us just so we are powered up with the knowledge, so we can make the decision for ourselves, and to kind of recognize when things are starting to go a little bit out of whack.
That's the thing, isn't it? If you recognize it, you're halfway there. Mm-hmm. You're literally halfway there. It's the not recognizing that, you know. And it's so different to puberty, isn't it? Puberty is so obvious. Like a blind man on a galloping horse can recognise when somebody's getting into puberty.
Yeah.
But yet nobody recognises when a woman is entering perimenopause, and that's what...
and periods too. Like you can kind of work out, because you put it in your calendar. You know that 1 week you're going to be great, 1 week you're going to be awful, the next week you're going to be in pain, then you're going to bleed. You'll be like, and then it goes through that sort of like cycle for 4 weeks, doesn't it? But, you know, so you sort of know where you're at.
I think you had bad periods, though. I think you did have bad periods.
I had bad periods. I wanted to kill everybody a lot of the time. And you know what? I want to end on this. So my periods were a struggle. They really were. But then when they stopped, I didn't want them to stop. Mm. It was something that I thought, I felt quite emotional about it. And I spoke to my friend about it and I said, I still get my periods. I'm so happy I still get my periods. You know, I'm definitely perimenopause, but I'm still. And she was like, why do you want to get your periods? They're horrible. They're painful. You know, you never know when they're going to come. you know, you're bleeding everywhere. It's just a pain and you don't want them anymore. And then when they stopped, I had this slight mourning when I was like, am I still a woman? Mm. Am I still... Do you know what I mean? It was this really strange sort of just saying goodbye to that part of my life. And I don't know whether it was because it signified fertility. It probably did. I feel like that was like, you know, for me, it was like about having a baby and also just, I don't know. I guess it was just saying goodbye to that phase of my life and entering this new one. And now it's been a year, literally, officially a year since I've had my last period. I am definitely menopausal, but I think now I am officially into my menopause and into this new phase of my life. I feel on most days better than I felt in a very long time. So I embrace it, and I just want to tell everybody out there that you can feel good too. It's not the end of your life, and your relationships can be great again, and you can feel fabulous about yourself. We just need to keep the conversation going so we can spread the word and spread the love. So on that note, mwah, I bid you farewell. I adore you.
Thank you. Oh,
thank you, Naomi.
What a privilege. What an honour. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. As you all know, this is a topic that I am so passionate about. Let's keep this conversation going. Tell your friends, tell your loved ones that this information is out there. Get them to listen to this episode. Remember, it's on all podcast platforms. I'm going to put all information to everything that Naomi and I spoke about on the show notes, links to different websites. But I just want to say a big thank you for all your support, and thank you for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.